When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So the Big 12 Conference goes 14-2 for the opening weekend in college football. And if you told me that last week, I'd say, let's take it, let's move on, and let's get to week two. But something is leaving me wanting more. I'm Pete Mundo. We're HeartlandCollegeSports.com. We cover the Big 12. We appreciate you being here and joining us as a part of the show. So that's what always makes that question difficult. Would you say 14-2 last week is a good week for the Big 12? Well, you probably would have said that includes a loss by West Virginia to Penn State. Maybe they trip up somewhere else. Yeah, that's pretty good. It could be a lot worse. But I watch back and think back on this week one, and I'm like, ugh, it was not a great, wasn't a bad week for the Big 12. But it wasn't in large part the week I was hoping for. So let's get right into it here as we recap week one. I'm Pete Mundo. Hit that subscribe button if you have not yet subscribed to the show on iTunes, on Spotify, and as always, hit that thumbs up on YouTube and, of course, subscribe to the channel. So it all started off in Morgantown. And the best part of the day for West Virginia fans was Machine Gun Kelly singing Country Roads during Big Noon Kickoff. And when that's the best part of the day, that's a problem. I admit, this entire offseason, I put a lot of stake into that West Virginia-Penn State game. And I thought West Virginia could hang. I thought they could cover. And they looked very much overmatched. And they looked like the game was too big for them. That's what it looked like for West Virginia against Penn State. You know, when you get a turnover like they did early in the first half in Penn State territory after a miscue, and you give it right back thanks to a miscue of your own, you deserve to lose the game. And when I look back on that game, West Virginia deserved to lose the game. Now, did Penn State get a break towards the end of the first half on a push-off? Yes, we can nickel and dime all those little things. But if you're being honest, West Virginia was not going to win that game. The Penn State offense was too much. The defense kept that running game in check. And then, yes, Jaheim White also ended up getting injured, which is a real blow for the West Virginia backfield. But it doesn't matter. The Mountaineers were in over their heads. And then you had the disaster of a weather delay, which you can't do anything about. But it just was kind of a microcosm of the entire afternoon that started off so promising, started off with sunny skies, and ends up after a two-hour weather delay with half the place emptied out and a total dud of an afternoon in what was an incredible week of hype leading up to that game. Now, Penn State is a team that can compete in the college football playoff and can make the college football playoff. And a lot of people are saying that and coming away with that conclusion, and I am as well. But still, if I look at West Virginia and I say they're a top 15 to 20 team in the country, which I think they can be, they should not get their doors blown off like they did and look that overmatched in that moment like they did against Penn State. If Penn State's a top 10 team and we think West Virginia can be in that 15 to 20 range, then there's a big gap between those two teams right now. And Garrett Green, who we spent a lot of, or we talked a little bit about it, but Neil Brown was trashing ESPN talking heads for not calling him a top 100 player in college football. Garrett Green didn't have a great day. In fact, what Penn State did very well, they bottled him up in the run game. He was never able to use his legs. And Garrett Green's a nice quarterback, he is, but he's at his best when he's being a dual threat quarterback. He's not really going to beat you as a pocket passer. He's not. So it was a rough day all around in Morgantown, and it goes to show you there's still a lot of football to play. I'm not going to overreact to anything in week one, but that one definitely stung. Now, when you look around the rest of the conference and you say to yourself, why else did it feel like this conference did not meet the expectations in week one? Well, it wasn't just Houston's loss to UNLV. And by the way, that was a game I told you to stay away from. My picks went 1-2 in week one. It wasn't great. I had West Virginia +8. I had Wyoming +7 against Arizona State. And then I also said my bad bet, I said don't bet Houston -2.5 against UNLV. So that was the game I got right. But it wasn't just that they lost to UNLV. It's that Houston got embarrassed by UNLV. Now, UNLV, I told you all the reasons I thought UNLV could win that game. Ton of talent coming back, skill position players all over the place, offensive line, the whole deal. So I thought UNLV would compete. I thought they could win. I didn't think they'd basically shut them out. That offensive line for Houston was a train wreck. Donovan Smith looked like a shell of what he's been in the past, and that's not necessarily all that impressive. But they got completely boat raced in that game. And that's something that I sit here and I did not see coming. Thought they could lose, didn't think it'd be a blowout in favor of the Running Rebels. So it wasn't just that Houston lost the game, it was how they lost the game that had me scratching my head. And then, as some of you are noting right now, the Big 12 goes 14-2. That's great. But dang, it was this close to being 13-3 thanks to Texas Tech nearly blowing it against Abilene Christian, winning 52-51 in overtime. A game they led after the first quarter 22-7. They had a comfortable 32-21 lead at halftime. And then they let it all slip away, mostly in the fourth quarter, when Abilene Christian put together an impressive couple of touchdown drives to take the game to overtime. And if it was not for horrendous play calling at the end by Abilene Christian, Texas Tech very well may end up losing that game. So at the end of regulation, Abilene Christian drives the ball down the field. There's like 2:40 left. They're down a touchdown. They drive the ball down the field with ease. And then Abilene Christian has like a second and one and third and one at the Texas Tech 40-yard line. And they throw two fade routes, two low-percentage garbage fade routes, when they're thrashing Texas Tech's defense. And they go for the low-percentage fade route, and it took a Texas Tech defender, especially on the first one in the left corner of the end zone, it took a tremendous defensive play by the Red Raiders to break up that fade pass that would have been a touchdown. But either way, you are gashing Tech up and down the field your last three drives. And on a second one and a third and one inside the five, you're 4 yards away from winning the game in regulation, and you throw fade routes. I mean, that was such a gift to Texas Tech. So they settle for a field goal, does Abilene Christian. The game goes to overtime. Tech scores a touchdown on its first possession. Abilene Christian scores a touchdown on its first possession. And then they go for the two-point conversion in one, once again, was a horribly drawn-up two-point conversion attempt. Tech dodged a bullet 1 year after they lost week one against Wyoming. And the Wyoming loss was a much better loss than this Abilene Christian loss was, or would have been, had they lost the game. It was just a horrific second half. And Texas Tech's secondary's got some major issues. 500 passing yards for Abilene Christian. Are you kidding me? I mean, what is Arizona going to do against Texas Tech? That is ridiculous. And I don't have the schedule in front of me to know whether or not they're playing, but you get the point. I'm just thinking about the high-flying offense of the Wildcats. Oh, they do meet on October 5th. So you got a month to go until those two teams are going to meet. And that has disaster written all over it for the Red Raiders. That was horrible. Now, you get out of there, you're 1-0. You don't overreact, you move on. But that could have been the ultimate nightmare for Joey McGuire in a year that he really has to get this team to pop. He's done a very good job in the first 2 years. He's done something that no one's done leading this program since Mike Leach, and that's put together back-to-back winning seasons in Big 12 play. But now you hope for the next step. And if he had started off the season with a loss to Abilene Christian, that would have been brutal. The fans would have been livid, and they would have had a right to be upset. But it also goes to show you this. Abilene Christian's offense had like 8 former FBS guys on it. This time of year is crazier than ever for a couple of reasons. And I talked about this on the show the other night. One of the reasons that it is more likely to get these FCS versus FBS upsets is because, first off, FCS players now, they can use the portal. They're going to have a lot of former FBS guys. If they don't, they have guys who have played together for a couple of years while the Power Four teams are working through new faces, new portal guys, the whole thing. So the FCS teams typically are going to have a more cohesive unit than the FBS teams right now, especially the Power Four, where a lot of these guys are going to be seeing live bullets for the first time. And you saw a couple of near misses on that front. But Tech did dodge the bullet there. And then the other game I look at and I say to myself, oh man, I mean, while the Big 12 went 14-2, it didn't feel like a great 14-2. Colorado eking by North Dakota State. The game that came down to the wire. Now, once again, Colorado's 1-0. We thought this game was going to be relatively close. The spread was like 8 points. So it's not like it was one of these Texas Tech 32-point favorites down to the wire. But still, if Colorado thinks it can compete in the Big 12, and I am not convinced they can, I don't have them competing atop the Big 12, I'm looking at that game and saying to myself, boy, I love Travis Hunter. Shurter Sanders is really good. But there's a lot that leaves me wanting more from the Buffaloes if they're going to be a team that we look at going into November and say, oh yeah, they're in the mix for a Big 12 championship title. They're going to be a team that we look at and say they can be there at the very end. I'm not convinced of that at all, especially when the Colorado run defense in particular just was getting gouged most of the night. Really, especially in that first half, and they made some adjustments, which if you're looking for that silver lining, Colorado's ability to make adjustments in that game at halftime was impressive. But you still have a North Dakota State team that was averaging over 11 yards a pass and nearly 4 yards a carry. That's just too many, especially when you start getting into conference play in the Big 12. So we're going to learn a lot more about this Colorado team when they take on Nebraska coming up this week. And then TCU comes up late in the second half, ends up taking care of Stanford. A game that I thought TCU was going to win, I felt pretty good about. But in that first half, I'm like, gosh dang, TCU is trailing Stanford. I know it's a tough spot on the road Friday night, but I just thought TCU was the much better team. The offense is looking much more like it did a couple of years ago, which is a great sign. But I'm not going to sit here and say I feel great about where the defense is at right now. I just don't. So that's something that if you look at it, you're going to have to say to yourself, if you're a TCU fan, that's where things are going to hopefully start to improve and improve very quickly for the TCU Horned Frogs. But they got the win. You got a Power Four win. You move on. You got to be happy about that if you are the Horned Frogs and if you're a TCU fan. So those are the reasons I sat there and I said to myself, it's 14-2. But it doesn't feel like a very fruitful 14-2 for the Big 12 in week one. I'm Pete Mundo. We're Heartland College Sports. Make sure you are subscribed to the show on iTunes, on Spotify. Hit that thumbs up on YouTube. We so appreciate you doing that and being a part of it. Now, I've got the bad out of the way. I got the stuff that we didn't really like out of the way. But let me talk about some of the things that really impressed me in week one in the Big 12. First off, can I start with Arizona State? Can I start with, to me, what was the most impressive performance week one in the Big 12? And that is the Arizona State Sun Devils. Kenny Dillingham could not get a better start to year two, his first game as a member of the Big 12 Conference, and they blow the doors off of Wyoming 48-7. That was as impressive as it gets on both sides of the ball, and they basically pitched a shutout if not for that late touchdown. Everything from Sam Levitt, the defense was all over the field in this game. You had to like what they were doing if you're a Sun Devils fan. three sacks, five tackles for loss all over the field, a plethora of weapons in the run game, in the pass game for Sam Levitt, who also had himself a solid outing in his first start for Arizona State. What's not to like? That Arizona State team, I will end up being dead wrong about if that is the team we see continue to develop over the season ahead. And I will be happy to be dead wrong about it because the atmosphere looked great in Tempe last night. I saw they basically set a record for the student section. There is a ton to like about what Arizona State did in this game. And if you were asleep, and I get it, it was tough to stay up, but I caught most of the game. You are going to be very impressed. And suddenly, this Arizona State-Mississippi State game is one that I've got circled when I didn't really have it circled before the season. Suddenly, I'm looking at that game and I'm saying, okay, if Arizona State's the team we think they can be, then they've got to get themselves a solid SEC victory coming up on Saturday at home. And I know that Mississippi State's going to be a bottom feeder in the SEC most likely, in which case getting this win is that much more important. Now, elsewhere, I'm going to stick with the Arizona schools. It was looking a little dicey there for Arizona early in the game against New Mexico, who they were going up and down the field with in a track meet. But Arizona takes care of New Mexico, and my goodness, it gets more impressive every time you watch some of the highlights from that game. Unbelievable. McMillan was outstanding. Fifita was great. I mean, these guys connected on four touchdowns. McMillan had a record 304 receiving yards on the night. This guy is going to be lighting it up this year for Arizona. And if you're an Arizona fan, you've got to be looking at it and saying, Jed who? Who's my former head coach? I don't even go to Washington. Forget that guy. Take a hike. We're having a great time here in Tucson. Now, I wonder if the defense is going to be able to keep up, but I think you're going to see a lot of these Arizona games played into the 40s, 50s, and maybe like last night, you're hitting 60 points. I just think that's how Arizona's going to want to play. Frankly, I think that's how they're going to have to play to win big in the Big 12. But the offense was just even more explosive than I thought it would end up being. It's not that anything necessarily surprised me, but it's also why I don't have a lot of confidence in Arizona necessarily meeting the expectations of some, because I just worry that this team is going to end up in a position where eventually that defense is going to come back to bite them, and the offense can only be relied on week after week after week so long before you're losing games 52-49, 49-45. I mean, just ask some of the Texas Tech teams over the last 10 years what that's like.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It can work to a point, but eventually you're going to have to get the defense to where you need it to be to compete at the top of this league, because the rest of the league is not necessarily looking to have track meets. It's not. Now, Oklahoma State also was a team that I looked at and I said, could they be in trouble? 13.5-point spread, defending FCS champion, South Dakota State coming to town. We all remember South Alabama last year when they lost 33-7. Oklahoma State took care of business with ease. Alan Bowman, I know it's an FCS opponent, but it's a damn good one, looked as comfortable at the position as I've seen him in a while. Ollie Gordon picked up right where he left off. Now, he's going to need better run blocking than what I saw in that game once they get to Big 12 play. But against South Dakota State, it was enough. They got the job done, and they won comfortably. To improve to 1-0, and look to me like one of the best teams after Week 1 in the Big 12. But you never really had that feeling after they jumped out to, what, a 10-0 lead in the first quarter, that Oklahoma State was going to be in a position where they were sweating this one out like a Central Michigan from 10 years ago, if you're a longtime Oklahoma State fan, or South Alabama last year. I mean, they've had these moments early in the season where they just don't look like the team that they end up being come October, November. That's just kind of Mike Gundy's style. None of that yesterday. And then Gundy was in a great mood. If you didn't see Gundy, he was making Connor Stallions and Shaggy references in the post game. Mike Gundy was in midseason press conference form on Saturday. That's how good he was. You know, normally, like, the coaches, too, everyone's kind of in that early season mold. Gundy was in, like, Halloween mode in terms of being in week 8, week 9, just being on the ball and sharp with his press conferences. He was money yesterday, but you could tell he was relaxed. You could tell he believes in his guys and this group that he's got right now in Stillwater. And he should feel that way after what we saw on Saturday from the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Now, I look around the rest of the conference, and I'm also very impressed by Baylor. I understand the opponent is the opponent, Tarleton State. But for a Baylor team that won one game last year, they have now matched last season's win total. 1 year ago, we were talking about Baylor losing to Texas State. Now they blow the doors off an FCS opponent 45-3, and it's not even close. Daquan Finn, the transfer from Toledo at quarterback, looked very good. I know he threw a couple of picks, but overall, very happy with how he ended up playing. Rushed for a touchdown, threw for a couple. And you look at the offense in general, and you see a lot of guys getting a lot of touches. There may not be that one guy necessarily, but you're going to see a lot of guys get a lot of opportunities with this offense. And you could see, if you watch some of the press conference afterwards, a refocused Dave Aranda. And if you're a Baylor fan, that's what you've been telling a lot of those people, like myself, outside of Waco all offseason. Dave Aranda has a new focus. He's embraced the portal. He knows what he has to do. He's calling plays on defense. That became very evident. And he enjoys being back in that role. And I'm glad that he does, because Baylor's going to need that if they want to, first off, get back to their winning ways, and second off, save Dave Aranda's job. Let's be honest. Dave Aranda has the hottest seat in the Big 12 Conference, and it's not all that close because there aren't that many hot seats in the Big 12 right now. But Aranda has the hottest seat in the Big 12, so he cannot afford to get off to a slow start. He didn't on Saturday. It becomes much tougher this weekend when they go to Utah and play the Utes in a non-conference game, because this game was scheduled prior to Utah joining the Big 12. So it doesn't count against the conference record. But if you're in the mix against Utah on the road, things will change very quickly when it comes to the perception of Baylor going into this season. And then the other games are the teams that kind of are in the middle of the pack. I don't look at these teams and say they had a great game. I don't look at them necessarily and say they had a bad performance, but I look at them and say they basically did what they were supposed to do, and partially that's based on what their expectations are going into the year. Utah waxing Southern Utah 49-0 on Thursday. Now, Utah fans are going to say, what do you mean that's not impressive? Well, I think you guys are going to win the Big 12 and go to the college football playoff with a single loss. So, like, you just did what you were supposed to do. Cam Rising is healthy, 5 touchdowns. There's not a lot more to say or really analyze based on what we saw on Thursday night in that game. Kansas blows out Lindenwood 48-3. I mean, it's an awful opponent. It's Jalen Daniels staying healthy. They didn't do a lot with Jalen Daniels. It was very evident that this game was about just keeping him healthy. And you could see a scenario because of now how the 12-team playoff stacks up. You could see a scenario where coaches start basically playing the long game. I don't want to say that it's like the NBA, because I hate the NBA, where you're going to have guys who are basically doing load management, like taking off a game a week to stay healthy for the postseason. I don't think that really works in college football. But I could see scenarios where guys like Jalen Daniels, who are just brittle, who you know you've got to kind of nurse through the season to get to where you want to be, and KU, if it wants to get to a college football playoff, has to win the Big 12, where they basically build the season around knowing games they have to win, maybe games where they have the opportunity, if they need to slip up, dial back the playbook, dial back Jalen Daniels, dial back the risk for a guy like Jalen Daniels, and then take that approach to a football season, because it's not like the old days where it's one loss and you're out. Someone is getting in from the Big 12. So if you can play the game that way, if you can stack your season that way, that can make all the difference in terms of the health of somebody like Jalen Daniels. UCF blows out New Hampshire 57-3. Now, the good here is that this team is going to be one of the best rushing teams in America. They piled up 450 yards on the ground. They have a plethora of riches at the running back position. And we knew that coming into the season. RJ Harvey, Penny Boone, Miles Montgomery, throw in new quarterback KJ Jefferson. The problem is, can KJ Jefferson pass the ball effectively? He had some horrific passing attempts. Some of those went viral on social media on Thursday night. But if you ask Arkansas fans about KJ Jefferson, they'll tell you that he is a guy who gets better as the season goes on. He develops throughout the season, and he gets better, or at least more comfortable, as the season goes on. At least that's what I've heard firsthand from certain Arkansas folks. So hopefully that's the case, because I've got him, of course, going to the Big 12 championship. And the KJ Jefferson I saw passing the ball on Thursday night is not going to get this team to Arlington for a Big 12 championship. So hopefully that starts to improve in the weeks ahead for UCF. Elsewhere around the Big 12, Kansas State blows out UT Martin 41-6. The defense is ahead of the offense, and I think that's to be expected when you've got a new OC, new quarterback, new pieces around him. That's to be expected. I know you're going to say, well, there's 41 points on the box score. What do you mean? If you watch the game, the defense is ahead of the offense for Kansas State, but they're right where you want them to be. It's a tricky game this week against Tulane for Kansas State, but this is what you wanted in week one. A comfortable win, get Avery Johnson out there, get him in a flow, get him in a routine, out in front of the home crowd, get him some confidence as the starting quarterback for the season, and then, of course, you hammer the ground game, which they did. Led by DJ Giddens, 124 yards on the ground, almost 10 yards a carry. He did a great job, and that's the kind of game you wanted from Chris Klieman. But this defense was tremendous. Double digits when it comes to tackles for loss, handful of sacks. They kept UT Martin in check in every facet of the game. Under 40 rushing yards, under 100 passing yards. The defense was awesome for Kansas State on Saturday. And then you get to teams like Iowa State. I mean, Iowa State, I said it on Twitter, X, on Saturday. Follow us there. Just search Heartland College Sports. Death, taxes, and a Matt Campbell coach team looking subpar against an FCS opponent in September. Now, you can look at it and say, hey, you won the game by 3 scores. What are you really going to complain about? Okay, it was 14. It was a 2-score game for the bulk of that game. It was. It was 14-3 for most of that game. So I know if you look at the final score, hey, it's a 3-score win. What are we complaining about 3-score wins for? I'm just saying, every year it's the same thing. Iowa State, I really should just bet whoever Iowa State is playing against the spread week one. I'd be foolish not to do that at this point, and I think we all would be. And let's just be clear, too. Iowa State going vanilla week one never helps them against Iowa. Matt Campbell's beaten Iowa once. It's not like this idea of I'm going to go vanilla week one and just kind of do what I have to do to get out of there with a win because I'm saving my playbook for week two against Iowa. That doesn't work anyway. So maybe you got to try something different if you're Matt Campbell, right? Maybe you say, no, I've got to roll out the playbook week one and then my guys know what the playbook is come week two and I can dish it all to Iowa. I'm just saying, like, Matt Campbell's great. Paul Rhodes could beat Iowa. He couldn't beat anybody else. You'd rather have Matt Campbell 7 days a week and twice on Sunday than have Paul Rhodes again. I'm just saying, you know, the early season woes for Iowa State, it's like every year I'm doing the same show about Iowa State. Every year it's the same thing. Slow starts, vanilla playbook, and then, of course, by Halloween, they're a totally different team. But you know, for a year that we're hoping, if you're an Iowa State fan, that your team pops and has kind of that 2020-esque run that you had with Brock Purdy and Breece Hall and that crew, it's not like you were doing cartwheels after that North Dakota 21-3 win on Saturday. All right? Because you couldn't have possibly felt that way. No way. Cincinnati handles Towson 38-20 in that game. And, you know, you're watching anytime you got a new quarterback like they do in Brendan Sorsby, you're watching him. He played well. Now, it's a FCS opponent in Towson, not a great one by any stretch. But if you're Cincinnati, you take the win. You feel better about yourself coming out of that game than maybe you did going into it, depending on what your expectations were. And now you get a much better test against Pittsburgh on Saturday. Not a great test, but a better test. A test that will give us more of an idea as to whether or not Cincinnati might be a team that sneaks up on some people in the Big 12, or if this was just a team that ended up, you know, taking advantage of mediocre FCS competition. Because I'm worried about the Cincinnati defense. They gave up over 5 yards a carry to Towson, over, you know, 11.5 yards a pass. So those things are still concerning to me if I'm looking ahead to where Cincinnati goes from here. And obviously, Scott Satterfield has got to show some improvement over last year, or his seat is going to be heating up before long as well. And last but not least in this conversation, in terms of teams that were just doing what they were expected to do, I would put BYU into that category. I know they covered the spread and then some with a 41-3 win over Southern Illinois, but that is what BYU football should do. I've heard this debate from some, and this was actually on our message boards. If you are not on our forums, sign up. They are popping right now with the season here. They're free. Just go to heartlandcollegesports.com, click on the forums tab, sign up. We're not going to bother you with emails and nonsense. It's just a way to grow our Big 12 community at heartlandcollegesports.com. But there was some talk amongst mostly BYU fans and then Four Corners fans, the Pac-12 teams, as to whether or not BYU is kind of trying to become more of a basketball school and give up this idea of being a national football program. I know the inherent challenges that BYU football faces, but I think that would be foolish because of the brand that BYU still possesses. It's easier for a school like BYU to just say, we're going all in on basketball, and then if football's good once in a while, so be it. But I that would be a loser's mentality for BYU. And it was a surprise before the game when Kalani Sitake announced that Jake Retzlaff was going to be the starting quarterback for BYU and not Gary Bohannon, the former Baylor quarterback, and then before he got to BYU, he was at USF. And then I watched a little bit of Jake Retzlaff, and I was like, now I get it. Jake Retzlaff, I enjoyed watching him. Great pocket mobility, good pocket presence, awareness. He's got a quick release. It's the first time I'd seen him play any real football. And I was like, damn, okay. I mean, I saw Gary Bohannon at Baylor. And yes, he helped that team get to a Sugar Bowl, but he also had his limitations in large part. I watched Retzlaff, and I thought to myself, okay, you know, I know we saw a little bit of him last year, but being in that role as a starting quarterback on Saturday, I was impressed. Once again, the competition was what it was, but it feels like there's something to work with there. It feels like there's something to build on. And we know that, you know, Chase Roberts is going to do his thing. And hopefully that leads to an improved offense for BYU this season, which they desperately need. I'm not sold on the defense by any stretch. But if you're a BYU fan, week one in the books, you say to yourself, okay, that's basically what we were hoping for. At least we didn't deal with a situation like Texas Tech or Houston, who just, for the most part, embarrassed themselves on Saturday. But now you go to SMU, BYU at SMU this weekend, which, how about that? If I told you 3 years ago that's a Big 12 ACC game, what do you tell me? I'm nuts? You tell me I'm crazy? That's what it is. The old Big 12 ACC matchup of BYU and SMU in Dallas. How about that? I'm Pete Mundo. We're HeartlandCollegesports.com. We so appreciate you, as always, being here. Every Sunday, we are going to drop our reaction shows, so make sure you're subscribed on iTunes, on Spotify. Leave that 5-star rating and review. If you have not done that yet, I really appreciate you doing that. It's a 30-second time suck of yours, and it really helps this show grow as the season moves along. And then, of course, subscribe on YouTube. We're going to be here more than ever, 3 to 4 times every week during the college football season with all the Big 12 content you could possibly ask for. So thank you, guys. Sign up for our forums. Leave those comments. Drop that 5-star rating. We so appreciate you. College football is here. It's back. We love it. We love you. Have a great day. Share the show with a buddy, and we'll talk to you soon. See you later.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.